This is Day to Day. I'm Alex Cohen.
I'm Madeline Brand. Every Monday this summer, we're looking at the nation's troubled economy through the lens of the California dream. That's because in many ways, as California goes, so goes the nation.
The Golden State has always attracted its fair share of dreamers. Here's one of them.
Well, this is the hydrogen Hummer, the famous hydrogen Hummer.
Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. Talk about a living example, an immigrant from a working-class family in Austria.
He comes to California and makes his name lifting weights, then in movies, and now he runs the state with the eighth largest economy in the world. But Schwarzenegger is now coming face-to-face with the limits of the California dream. The state now has a multi-billion dollar deficit. California leads the nation in home foreclosures.
It wasn't always like this. Today, NPR's Richard Gonzalez looks back to when the California dream was alive and well, at least for some.
In the early 60s, one of the most popular shows on TV was all about a golden place in the Golden State.
Walt Disney presents...
Walt Disney's Wonderful World of Color was a cross-promotion for the number one tourist attraction in America, Disneyland. The family-oriented fantasy land is located, as Time magazine describes it, in the magic realm of California. And as the state's population surpasses New York in 1962, the California dream is widely promoted by other media.
Everywhere you look, there was this sense of exuberant well-being about being a Californian.
Kevin Starr is a historian at the University of Southern California.
I read, I can't tell you how many articles, as we became the largest state in the union. I mean Holiday, Life, Look, Saturday Review. They all ran major full book articles on California. It's announced, here it is, as an urban-suburban fulfillment of wartime and post-war dreams for the good life.
California boasts a new freeway and water system, new campuses for the state university, and lots of new jobs for the highly skilled. Across the nation, the California dream sells like a commodity, says historian Kearse Granite May.
The idea of California, you don't even have to go to California to experience it. You can buy a California ranch house in almost any state of the union. You can have a pool. You can turn on your radio.
Let's go surfing now. Everybody's learning how. Come on a safari with me.
But the dream has its limits, and that soon becomes apparent in California's minority communities and on college campuses. December 1964, students at UC Berkeley stage a major protest against the university's ban on political activity. The students launch what they call a free speech movement. Their leader is a philosophy major named Mario Savio.
There's a time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop.
Berkeley becomes synonymous with a burgeoning campus revolt that would sweep the country. But off campus, the protests provoke a backlash among Californians who view the students as spoiled children, says journalist Peter Schrag.
I'm working class. I'm making, you know, $14,000, whatever it was. You know, I'm paying my taxes so these kids can go to Berkeley or UCLA or whatever, and they're tearing the place down. It is offensive.
Just a few months later, another jolt to the California dream, this one from an L.A. neighborhood called Watts.
6 days of rioting in a Negro section of Los Angeles left behind scenes reminiscent of war-torn cities. More than 100 square blocks were decimated by fire and looters.
Practically overnight, America gets a picture of California that's very different from anything the country has ever seen.
And few buildings were left intact. Firemen were harassed by snipers and brick-throwing hoodlums as they attempted to control the fires, many of which were left to burn themselves out.
When the violence in Watts is finally over, 34 people are dead, about 1,000 injured, almost 4,000 people arrested, and much of it has been televised live. Back then, Watts resident Larry Aubrey was working as a parole officer. More than 40 years later, as he was recalling the unrest, Aubrey told NPR he didn't condone the violence, but he did identify with the anger that caused it.
People were just venting. People with very little hope just said, the hell with this, we're tired of this, you know.
A government report on the cause of the riots cites chronic unemployment, inadequate schools, a lack of public transportation. Yet the notion that the California dream eludes the black residents of Watts comes as a surprise to the rest of California, says journalist Peter Schrag.
Watts was a reminder that even in California, we were not beyond the race problem. And it really was kind of a shock of waking up from a dream.
Public reaction to Berkeley and Watts would have a big impact on California politics. Ronald Reagan runs for governor of California in 1966, and he speaks of the Golden State as a paradise lost. He says unruly university students should be treated like criminals. As for Watts, Reagan blames the riot on the unreasonable expectations of outsiders.
In there are a great many people who've come recently from the Deep South. Like earlier immigrants who came from other countries to this country, they had come here many times in their lack of education or knowledge. They'd come believing in a lot of promises that the streets were paved with gold and that all their problems were going to be solved if they could once get to Los Angeles, and it wasn't true, of course.
Ronald Reagan gives voice to an emerging conservative tide in California politics. There are other ground-shaking events. Pessimism over the Vietnam War, continuing campus unrest, the assassination of Robert Kennedy in Los Angeles, the Manson murders, and finally, the infamous rock concert at Altamont, where four people die.
There certainly is an enormous amount of street theater of conflict.
Historian Kevin Starr.
And the cool of the 1950s, the cool California suddenly becomes the very not cool, very hot California, the passionate, engaged, messy. You have really a transformed California.
Transformed, but still on America's cutting edge when it comes to environmentalism, gay rights, technological innovation, and the challenges of immigration. Starr says the dream is matured and tempered. The state's population has doubled since the early 60s, and it's fairly clear that for many across the country and around the world, the California dream lives on. Richard Gonzalez, NPR News.
What does your California dream look like? Has it changed with the economic slowdown? We have a special blog devoted to this topic.
It's called Daydreaming, and you can find it by going to the day-to-day site at npr.org. Maybe you live in another state. Do you still consider California a model of innovation, a place where dreams can become reality?
npr.org/day-to-day.